Welcome to the Sober Rebel Bite Size series for January. This episode is no more than 20 minutes, and there will be one a day throughout the month of January. I've been doing this podcast now for nearly 2 years, and in that time I've spoken to so many amazing guests. So I thought it would be a lovely idea this month to revisit some of the highlights of those conversations every day throughout January to keep you focused on why you're doing this. Today's bite-sized episode is with Alex. In the main episode with Alex, he talks about change, connection and giving back. Now, Alex has set up Club Clarity, where he focuses organising sober socials and sober events. He's an amazing champion for still going out and having a great time without alcohol.
Six years ago, something like that, I was diagnosed. Well, I haven't actually been diagnosed because they can't find what it is, but I've had some eye problems for years. And long story short, I've been to London, Liverpool, Manchester. I've had doctors queue up to have a look and do different tests. I've had gene tests, MRI scans, dye tests, injections in both eyes multiple times. I've had all sorts of stuff, and ultimately I've lost 95% sight in my left eye. And there was a point about 2.5 years ago where it was looking like I was going to go blind. And my right eye was deteriorating badly to the point where I couldn't read text messages, I couldn't read emails. And I was beginning to have voice recognition stuff put on my phone, voice recognition stuff put on my emails. And I was basically almost preparing myself for what was looking in all likelihood was going to happen. But I chose, obviously, to emotionally carry on pushing everything down and running away from it and hiding from it and looking for the answer in a bottle. And I didn't accept that I had a problem. And it was when I got sent back into, and I say sent because my family did send me each time. I got sent back into my final rehab. And before I was going in, we were sat on my mum and dad's drive, and my 17-year-old son, as he was then, turned around to me and told me that he needed me. He needed me. He was 17 and he needed me. I was 42 at the time. And he said, Dad, you're 42 and you still need your parents. I'm 17 and I need you. And that was my biggest, most powerful, those three words, I need you, from my own son was my turning point. And it was as hard as then the next journey was, it was my why, you know, my son needed me, you know, and I was going to do what it took. And I guess I always describe it as everything, you know, I live my life by everything happens for a reason. And I needed that reason. I needed that reason at that time. And it was my turning point to throw in the towel effectively and stop fighting. And that was hard because I'd never been beaten by anything, you know, in my life. I'd always found a way. And, you know, whether at work, personal life, I'd always found a way of fixing or getting through stuff, and I'd never sort of lost. And this was the first time that I had to accept defeat, and I couldn't beat addiction. And I was an alcoholic, and yeah, I had to accept it. And I had to then change my life and create a new life based upon the new me, effectively. And change, you know, change was a big thing because I couldn't stay doing what I was doing and, you know, living the life I was living previously and expecting to be able to abstain and to be able to not get caught up in feeling a lot of jealousy or sadness that I couldn't drink anymore. I had to change, you know, but all the bits that I've started putting together in my life over the last couple of years and all the changes I've put in place, it's all step by step. Positive changes. I'm never going to be perfect, but what is perfect? Who wants to be perfect? I continue to work on myself every single day. I'm very reflective and very thought provoking to myself about, could I have dealt with things differently? Have I, offended somebody? Have I been a bit, arse, with somebody? Because, I still have every single emotion. And if I'm honest, I probably have more emotions these days than I've ever had in my life. Because I spent so long shutting all my emotions off, and hiding away from them all, that when I first started allowing emotions, it hit me like a ton of bricks. It was incredibly, draining, and probably because there was so much stuff pushed down and blocked, within my body, that when they started coming out, it was like somebody had took my batteries out for a few days.
Yeah, the floodgates opened.
Oh, well, I remember doing one of my pieces of work in my second rehab, and I ended up spending 2 days in bed. It just drained me, absolutely drained me, because it must have been stuff that I had pushed down for so many years, and basically it was just all came out, and I was emotionally wiped out for 2 days, physically wiped out after the emotional side of it. It was ridiculously powerful. And people probably look at me, what? How can that be the case? But it's weird how, if you've not allowed your body and not allowed yourself to have those emotions, and I'd pushed them down for 40 odd years, and the build up of them must have been horrendous.
Yeah, and that can be exhausting, can't it? It's the cognitive energy of changing, of experiencing these things, thinking them through, can be absolutely exhausting.
I guess it's quite nice to, like, sort of be able to look back and see the overall journey over the last 3.5 years and the development. And I also like sharing the realism of my journey, that I still do have, the devil on my shoulder. I still, do find things hard at times. I'm not, gonna say that sobriety for me as an addict is easy, because at times it's not perfect and it's not easy, but I can do so many little bits of change, little bits of positive things. And I spent so long drinking and, running away from everything, that now I want to embrace the time that I've got here, and I want to try and get the best out of, my life, and I want to try and give as much positivity and help to others as well along the way. And that encourages me. That really, drives me on these days. And it gives me another purpose and another why, to try and basically show other people that no matter what you've gone through or what you're going through, there is another way, and it will all be okay, if you keep that faith and you believe. Because I got to the point where, at the end, I genuinely didn't care whether I was here or not anymore.
You were going through so much, though.
Yeah, but then I was going through so much on my own, because I wouldn't speak to anybody. I wouldn't allow anybody in. I wouldn't accept any help. I wouldn't accept any support. I pretended to the outside world that I was fine, and I pushed everybody away, because it was easier to hide away and pretend that I was this strong alpha male that could cope with anything and everything, and make a joke of the fact that I could only see bits, and make a joke of everything, because that was easier than it was to actually allow myself to properly cry, tell people that I was scared, and ask for help. That was the harder thing to do, because of the era that I grew up in. I grew up in, where my belief was always that a man had to be strong, had to look after everybody else. A man couldn't cry, all the really old-fashioned beliefs that are so wrong, totally, totally so wrong. But that was, how it was back then. I never spoke about, my feelings or my emotions. It just didn't happen. So as soon as a challenge came in my life, it was, let's just run away from it. let's just run away from it and hide effectively.
So when did you first start drinking? Was it in your teenage years?
I guess, teenage years, and I'm 44 now, and my era was, that you went to the pub and you drank as much as you could. Probably even before that, we went to the park and, sat in the park and drank White Lightning or whatever there was, back then. And it was everybody drank to get drunk. Nobody drank just to have, one or two drinks. Everybody drank to get drunk. And half the time, the people who were the most drunk were the funniest. You'd end up being sick more times than you wouldn't. And it was just that old style of association with alcohol. And I think the Gen Z these days, because there's a lot more facts, knowledge, resource available about health and about what it actually does and the benefits and the health side of things, a lot more of the Gen Z choose, which is amazing, choose to either not drink or be very controlled with their drinking. I do wonder, and I've never thought about this actually, I do wonder if that's because they're able to be a lot more open about their emotions and their thoughts and their feelings and communicate that than we used to be able to. Because certainly from my group of friends, school friends and stuff, we probably would never have spoken about, would never have had a conversation about, oh, are you sad today? Why are you sad? We just wouldn't. It was, get on with it. And I wonder if we used it as ways of just coping with our blocked up emotions as well, because it was an easy way of running away from things. And I've never thought about that before, actually. So.
I was just thinking then, as you said that, I wonder if that, because we're similar ages, I'm a couple of years older than you, so I'm 46. So it was growing up in like the 90s, late 90s, isn't it, really? And
Yeah.
it was very booze heavy for women, but it was very booze heavy for men as well. And you're right, you'd socialize, you'd go to the pub, that was the only time really you did see your friends.
Yeah. And I don't know. I'll ask you the question. Did you used to speak about your emotions? Did you used to talk about your feelings? Did you,
No, I don't think we did. I was struggling with a lot of different things, an eating disorder. I was in a marriage I didn't want to be in really young. And I just, it's that old saying. Do you remember the old saying, you've made your bed, you lie in it? Kind of.
Yeah. It was always, I describe it as the Great British way of stiff upper lip and get on with it, and that was, and I think that, but that goes back generations as well, because I think about probably my parents' parents, and it was so where you just basically stiff upper lip, get on with it, nobody talks, nobody says anything. And then it's almost like, oh, you couldn't say that. What would the neighbours think? What would so and so think of you? You can't do that. Well, actually, I can. If I want pink hair, I'm going to have pink hair these days, and I don't care. But it took me a long time to get to that inner peace with myself.
If you'd like to listen to the whole episode, then head back to the 29th of October, 24, episode 29. If you'd like to find out more about working with me, then head to my website, louisaevans.com. I don't just support with sobriety, I also help with many other areas, including anxiety, overthinking, and low mood. On the website, you'll find lots of resources, including my online Sober Resilience course, and if you use the code RESILIENCE544 as a Sober Rebel listener, you'll get a 30% discount. And also a range of hypnosis recordings. Use code SOBERREBEL, all one word, to buy one, get one free. Self-hypnosis is a very powerful and effective way to begin to reprogram how we automatically think about things. You'll find a range of different topics on my website. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all of my guests on the Sober Rebel podcast for sharing their story and for taking the time to talk to me. The Sober Rebel podcast will be back very soon. I'm just currently recording some fantastic episodes to share with you. I hope you have a good day.